Welcome to another episode of Commission Chats. I'm your host, John Scapini. Commission Chats is a podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the United States Sentencing Commission. Today is part 6 of our Problem Solving Courts miniseries, where we'll be joined by Judge Bruce Hendricks of the District of South Carolina. My colleague Lori Baker spoke with Judge Hendricks about the Bridge Drug Court and REAL reentry programs in South Carolina. If you missed any of the other episodes in this miniseries, they're available on both Spotify and iTunes. I'll now pass it over to my colleague Lori.
Good morning, Judge Hendricks.
Good morning, Lori.
How are you today?
I am great, and I hope you are.
I am. I appreciate you taking some time to talk with us today. So you have some problem-solving courts down there in South Carolina. Can you tell us a little bit about the programs that you have?
Yes, we have a drug court program, and we also have a reentry program. The drug court program is called The Bridge, and the reentry program is called REAL Court, which stands for Reenter, Able to Lead.
How long have you been on the bench and involved with these courts?
So prior to becoming a United States District Judge in 2014, I was a U.S. Magistrate Judge beginning in 2002 and an AUSA before that. In about 2010, as a U.S. Magistrate Judge, I was tasked with the project of creating the District of South Carolina's very first drug court program. That was right about 2010. And then the reentry program was begun around 2017.
So you were involved with the one program from its inception or both programs?
Both programs from their inceptions. So the District of South Carolina's Bridge program is, as I mentioned, the drug court. And it's a voluntary program of at least 1 year that's designed for criminal defendants who come before us who clearly suffer from substance abuse or addiction. And the nexus has to be that they have committed a federal crime to feed his or her addiction. And participants engage in various levels of treatment in order to address issues of substance use disorder. We hold regularly scheduled twice a month court hearings to assess the progress of each participant. And our participants in the drug court may enter it as either a pretrial or post-conviction defendant. The pretrial defendants may be admitted to the program after they've pleaded guilty to the charge, but before they're sentenced on the charge. And for a post-conviction defendant, they may be admitted to the program after they've been charged with a violation of their supervised release or probation, but before they've been sentenced on any particular violation.
So participants on either end of that program receive some benefit by completing the requirements, either on the front end or on the back end when they're facing revocation, correct?
Yes, that's exactly right. The pretrial defendants who successfully complete the Bridge program can expect the U.S. Attorney's Office, in its own discretion, of course, to move for downward departure, reduce the charges to a lesser offense, or to recommend a non-guideline service sentence, or refer the participant to pretrial diversion, or in some instances, they have dismissed the charges entirely. And then post-conviction defendants who successfully complete the drug court may receive a one-year reduction or more in their term of supervised release or probation. And our team, the team consists of a federal judge and or a U.S. magistrate judge as the leader of the team, a U.S. probation officer who coordinates the program, and supervises the drug court members to help them achieve the goals of the program. We also include AUSAs, federal public defenders, defense counsel if the participant chooses to have a private counsel, our court staff, and treatment providers.
So lots of different participants on your team here with the Bridge program.
Correct.
Tell me a little bit about the REAL program.
So the District of South Carolina established a two-year reentry program for high-risk defendants who are serving a period of supervision upon their release from the Bureau of Prisons. And as I mentioned at the outset, this program is known as Reentering Able to Lead, or the REAL program. And the mission is to help participants improve their chances of avoiding reoffending while at the same time increasing the likelihood of successfully completing supervised release. While on supervised release, as we know, a defendant is subject to various conditions, including not violating any federal, state, or local laws, and not using illegal substances, all while under the supervision of a U.S. probation officer. Participants may enter the REAL program voluntarily or by a court order or by referral after committing a violation while on supervision. And the REAL program combines regular, traditional supervision strategies with structured cognitive behavioral therapy, targeted treatment services, and monthly interaction with a judge in a less formal way. And kind of in sum and substance, it's what we call souped up supervision. And this team, similar to the Drug Court Bridge Program, consists of a federal judge, either a district judge or a magistrate judge, U.S. probation officers, AUSAs, federal public defenders, our court staff and treatment providers. And we've found that the potential benefits of successfully completing the program include early termination from supervision and or dismissal of pending supervised release violations. And critically, we call it the REAL program. We do not call it court. We call it the REAL program. And the reason why we're insistent on calling it the REAL program rather than court is because for this population, historically, nothing good has ever happened to these folks in a courtroom. So it's a program, right? Not a court.
Well, that terminology can be pretty important.
Yes.
Tell me how you identify and measure your program successes.
We look at it as though success can be and is often measured in multiple ways. For the Bridge program, it's key to remember that substance use disorder is a lifelong struggle. So in terms of talking about success of the drug court, it isn't just about whether the participant relapses again or engages in the same type of criminal conduct again, because we've found over the years that problem-solving courts are just not a panacea for all problems related to reoffending. Of course, we hope these things never happen. But as far as measuring the success of the drug court, we look at success in the holistic sense. So, for example, we've seen that it truly changes participants' perception of the court, of a courtroom, of the prosecutors, which are the U.S. attorneys, and of the U.S. probation officers. And in turn, we've seen that participants are then more willing in general to welcome advice, feedback, and assistance prior to engaging in new criminal conduct or relapsing. So it builds important and sometimes life-saving relationships and connections with our participants, with the former graduates, with their sponsors in AA or NA, with treatment providers, and even with the judge herself. And so it's key to have that supportive team around them. It builds a supportive team around them moving forward in their lives, and it helps them understand that they can trust people in authority. It also provides life and recovery skills that they can use throughout their life. And even if one fails the program, we have seen that they still received a benefit oftentimes, as there is a huge value in just participating and learning that people are out there in the world willing to help, and learning that change is impossible in their lives.
Are there any particular success stories that come to your mind that you'd be able to share with us?
There was one participant, and she has come back multiple times and been our graduation speaker. She was initially charged with a serious conspiracy to possess and possession with an intent to distribute methamphetamine. She was released to bond, but she wasn't able to comply with bond due to her severe substance misuse. She tested positive many times for cocaine and methamphetamine. She used Adderall and Valium without valid prescriptions. She moved around and changed her residence without ever notifying her pretrial officer, and she overdosed on heroin. So our pretrial services office intervened, was able to secure her placement in an inpatient treatment facility and later into a sober living recovery home. And she had participated in various treatment programs prior to being charged in federal court, but nothing had ever worked. She participated and successfully completed bridge and was able to ultimately regain custody of her two children that had been taken from her. Her time in bridge, this is a good example of being patient on the part of the team, because she had a lot of struggle in bridge. She relapsed, and frankly, we weren't sure she would make it. She was briefly detained in the local jail for being dishonest with the program. But ultimately, she graduated. She was able to complete a program which involves recovering professionals, regaining their license to be a nurse. So she was able to get her nursing license back and began practicing, and still practices in her field as a nurse. And so she has her children back, and we see her quite often. She comes back and mentors our drug court participants and is a fabulous graduation speaker. So, you know, again, in terms of success, we've seen where the program demonstrates that a person who's charged in federal court begins to feel that they're more than just a docket number. They're treated with dignity, with respect, and they're given some hope. And they've had none of these things before. And so success is also when a court-involved person reestablishes healthy family connections and pro-social networks. And this is encouraged not only by the team, but by mentors who we have deployed and that model pro-social behavior. It's also, we believe, a success when a participant holds themselves and other participants accountable for their actions. And success is when persons in the program are able to slow down their thinking and mitigate some of the harmful behaviors before they occur. Success is also witnessing how various players in the judicial system can come together for a common goal and be impactful rather than always being thought of as adversaries. And success is also shown when the local community has a chance to be a partner in helping to change someone's trajectory via mentoring or employment.
Definitely a number of successes you've identified there, in addition to just the program graduate, far-reaching successes. Can you tell me about some of the challenges that you've faced with your programs?
Yes. So, of course, as is life, there's always a lack of funding, and treatment resources are limited. And that's a particular challenge in smaller communities and cities as compared to the New York cities, you know, the big areas. We're a little smaller venue. One problem and challenge that we always seem to come up with is transportation problems for defendants where public transportation is not readily available, going out to the rural areas that we serve here in South Carolina. And while we utilize bus passes, it can be hard for those living in these rural areas to adhere to the requirements of the program, such as getting to required meetings inside and outside of court. And then finally, we've seen in terms of recruitment, a decline in defendants eligible to participate in the drug court program in the last few years due to initiatives of various agencies and the U.S. Attorney's Office. In other words, there's been a decrease in our district in prosecuting nonviolent white-collar or property crimes, so our population is a bit more limited. But to the contrary, our real court program is actually increasing in the number of people who wish to participate in the program. And frankly, there's just not enough room to accept them all.
Well, that's a good problem to have.
Yes.
What do you personally enjoy the most about your involvement with these programs?
So what I've seen is that these programs bring the entire court family together in all respects, in terms of even from the court security officers, the marshals, U.S. probation office, which is the backbone and hero of both of these programs, with the clerk of court who participates, defense counsel, and there is a genuine natural team effort that happens where everybody is just pulling for these participants to succeed and to be able to enjoy their lives and take care of their families. There's a lot of pride in it. And we found that the other judges who don't in particular handle the program, they also take pride. They're pulling for their offenders that they have referred over to the program, and we have wonderful graduation ceremonies that pull everybody together. So it's truly a rewarding experience for all.
Do you have any advice that you would give to a listener that would like to start an alternative court?
Well, I'd say that overall, for both kinds of programs, that the more consistently that participants receive rewards for their accomplishments and swift sanctions for their infractions, the more effective the program will be. And that applies to either a reentry or a drug court program. The hardest thing in the world is to sanction a participant or to actually have to remove them from the program, because we are so much pulling for their success. But for the good of the program, the sake of the program, and the effect of sanctions and removal from programs on the other participants, it's critical for the participants to see what the rewards can be and what the sanctions can be. If resources were available, I'd also recommend including law enforcement or community corrections officers on the team. And participants are most at risk for using drugs or committing new crimes in their natural environment. So if drug court can extend its influence into the natural setting through random home visits, verification of employment, school attendance, monitoring curfew compliance, it'll likely have a better outcome. Another point would be that it's critical for folks starting a program to adhere from the very, very beginning to evidence-based best practice guidance and standards from the National Association of Drug Court Professionals, also known as the NADCP. And in particular, follow that guidance, which we did from, have tried to do from day one. We brought in the NADCP to give us a seminar before we started our program. Follow that guidance that they can give you and that they provide to the team in classifying the difficulty level of a participant's particular goals, in delivering incentives and sanctions to enhance their attainment of achievable goals to help them develop skills and resources needed to achieve, in particular, difficult goals. And finally, I think I've hinted at this, but to timely address issues with appropriate level sanctions. The key is the sanction should quickly follow the conduct and that it is an appropriate response. In other words, not too harsh or not too lenient, and the team will staff these potential sanctions and rewards, and everybody thinks it through, troubleshoots it in order to come up with a sanction or a reward that is an appropriate response to the conduct.
That's good advice. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us about the programs you're operating?
Well, thank you. I think it is a real honor to facilitate these programs. And in the administration of both, I've seen the power of interagency and community cooperation to the financial efficiency of our law enforcement and to the real betterment of people's lives. It's a success built on a kind of a hope and optimism and commitment that says that we can do something extraordinary in the administration of justice, that the adversarial process also has space for a complementary one, that ingenuity can overcome fiscal constraints, that a courtroom can both punish and heal, and that judges can both be judicial and human.
Wonderful. Well, it sounds like you're having some really good success down there in South Carolina, and we appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you, and thank you for having me, and if anybody has further questions, please reach out.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Judge.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Commission Chats. Stay tuned for more episodes in our Problem Solving Courts miniseries. For more information on Problem Solving Courts, visit our website, ussc.gov, and hover over the Education tab to access all of our Problem Solving Courts resources. Commission Chats is now available on Spotify and iTunes, so be sure to follow along with us there. If you'd like to receive the latest news from the Commission, you can find us on LinkedIn, or we are at theussc.gov on X. That's all for now. I'm John Scapini, and thanks for listening to Commission Chats.